Don, we were just talking about Vegas, and I didn't necessarily want to start this conversation or even necessarily address it. But I think there, would you concur that at 7,000 pledges several weeks into the campaign, at the very least, it's an underwhelming response in Las Vegas?
Not yet. And the reason I say that is basically this. They're doing the campaign. They have their timelines. They had certain expectations, and the campaign isn't over yet. And I have learned from long experience that judgments made midstream, even if it's past halfway midstream, are likely to turn out to be wrong as often as right. So we'll know the answer to that in due course. But at this point, I wouldn't rush to judgment on it.
Do you have a personal feeling about what will happen in Las Vegas?
Meaning, will there be an expansion team eventually awarded?
Yep.
Not really. I expect a couple of things. If the drive is ultimately successful and the ownership group wants to make a real run at it, I assume that the NHL will listen hard to them. I have no reason to believe that any commitments have been made, even on a contingent basis, and they'll look. And the first responsibility to determine the location of teams and the number of teams, which is what expansion comes down to, rests with the league. If it's something that they're treating seriously, we'll look at it. To the extent we have opinions, we'll get into it with them. From the player's standpoint, there's obviously two things going on. Balance would be better served with 32 teams rather than 30. Mm-hmm. And every extra team you have are extra jobs, and those matter to players.
Do you have an opinion on whether, from a we talked a fair bit with Mr. Bettman about the geography of the National Hockey League, and that right now, probably if you looked at the most likely places to go, and it's two teams, hard to see turning Quebec down. And if Vegas is the other one, you got one west, one east, the preference probably would be two in the west. Do you have an opinion on that?
I go at it a little differently. I suppose in a perfect world, if you could have two in the west, that solves the problem. You don't have to worry about divisional realignment or anything
Correct.
Else. But if the best two markets turn out to be Quebec and Seattle or Las Vegas or somewhere else, and that's where you want to go, then that's where you go, and you have discussions about rearranging the divisions effectively in that scenario to move a team that's now in the east to the west. It's not the easiest thing to do, but it's not intrinsically unsolvable either.
We were, obviously today's, we were talking a lot of World Cup with the Commissioner, Don, and one of the things I asked him early in the conversation, you know, we're coming up on 40 years, well, this World Cup will come 40 years from the first, after the first Canada Cup. And I asked him why it didn't stick. You know, there were Canada Cups, there were World Cups, there were a lot of great hockey played, but it never really got established. And he essentially said it was union problems. You know, the changes in union leadership. I'm going to pause so people can hear you laughing. Go ahead.
Okay. That's not what I expected. All I can tell you is this. I don't know what the discussions were during all of those years. I don't know what the holdup was. I don't know why there wasn't a World Cup 4 years after 96. Wasn't here, had other fish to fry down at my old job with baseball. But I can tell you this, that we approach this on the NHLPA side, and I believe the NHL is approaching it on their side in the following way, and maybe this is a fundamentally different kind of approach. We want to find a way to agree upon and then commit to a long-term, regular, recurring series of international events, which would include World Cups, could well include a series of other things, and really try and elevate hockey globally and develop markets that we think we ought to have a good chance to have a big presence in. And if what Gary means is that he thinks the union is constituted, knows how is to be able to do that, that's great. If it just was never approached that way before, but we're going to do it right now, that's great too. I can't really speak to what happened in the past.
What other, you mentioned, so other international events, what are we talking about then, Don?
I think there'll be some discussions about whether or not we play more in-season games in Europe and perhaps in a different format than premier games, which kick off the season. There have been discussion about informal at this stage about various types of all-star formats. We've sort of been using a Ryder Cup type format as a euphemism for that. There are ideas floating around, you know, maybe eventually, although this is way down the road, you could get club versus club championship competitions of some sort or another. And the trick is to develop a recurring series of events which highlights the game, highlights the NHL and the best players, begins to make real inroads into raising the economic basis of European hockey to North American levels, and really pushes hockey to a higher place, not only on the global stage, but also in North America, so that it really is looked at in the same breath as baseball, football, and basketball.
Is that compatible?
I think we can do that.
Is that compatible with remaining in the Olympic Games?
Yes, I think it is.
Okay, so tell me how that works. Because I know your players want to stay in the Olympic Games, but tell me how that works.
There's no question that if we can get the appropriate agreements, and you know, there's a lot that goes into that, but if we can, as we have in the past, then the players are very much going to want to play. But, you know, when you look at it, what you would do is essentially say, if you're going to do this, and we aren't there yet, that you're going to incorporate the Olympic Games into this regular recurring calendar.
With Don Fair, the executive director of the NHL Players Association, one of the things that I'm not thrilled about in this new World Cup. Let me start by saying I'm very happy the World Cup is back. I think it's long overdue. I'm looking forward to it. I think most hockey fans, all hockey fans, are. The part of this equation that kind of leaves me cold is these last two teams. And it just occurs to me that the agenda here is to get as many NHL players into this tournament as we possibly can. And the way to do that is to create a team, you know, a team of others, and an under-23 squad, where they're, and I understand the time is tight, but I think there were other mechanisms that you could have put in place. If you have to have an 8-team tournament rather than a 6-team tournament to get two other countries in there, will they be competitive? Maybe not. But, you know, you go to a World Cup of soccer or a World Cup of anything, there are always underdogs, invariably. Am I wrong in that assessment? Was the NHLPA a key participant factor in determining who those last two teams would be?
Well, let me take that on several levels. First, to your last question, yes. We're doing this jointly with the NHL, and we have to get agreement on all issues and then get agreement from the various other partners we're going to have working with us, whether it's the European Federations, the IIHF, broadcast networks, or so on. So the answer to that is of course, yes. Secondly, we approach this in the following way. One of the things we want to do with this tournament is make a statement. We want to make a statement that we're here to stay, we're here to stay on the world stage, and we can create the most competitive hockey tournament ever played. And that goes directly to your question about maybe the last two teams would not have been all that strong, but they're of course, underdogs. It is true, though, that when I go and talk to my members and they look at it, you have all kinds of players who could conceivably be in this tournament that are great players that simply would not be. And there's a fundamental question as to whether, for purposes of having the best players in the world there and for getting into more markets in Europe and getting exposure, you want to do that. I mean, to take the most obvious example of all, you know, how long would it be before Slovenia was in a tournament? Yet they have a player mm-hmm. that a lot of people think is the equal of anybody out there that certainly would play in this tournament. So you look at it from that standpoint. And when you put all that together, the conclusion was we didn't have a lot of time. There were a lot of other things on the calendar. We want to make the statement. We want it on NHL ice with NHL rules. We want to do it in a destination venue to create that kind of an atmosphere that we think will be very helpful for other tournaments. And we're going to try and make a statement with this. Whether we stick with it or modify it or go back to a much more traditional tournament when we have more time for 2020 remains to be seen. Although reverting to a more traditional format with an elimination round is certainly something which will be a big part of the discussions going forward.
Yeah, I understand. You know, getting a player like Kopitar into the tournament. You know, and he wouldn't probably wouldn't otherwise be in the tournament. And I understand exactly that you're going to. You know, this is going to give you the best field. I guess the one thing I wondered, and I asked Gary about this as well, that just, you know, if you do decide that this is a one-off and then you change it back to something more traditional, and one of the issues with World Cup / Canada Cup, aside from the unpredictability of when it was going to happen, well, that's it. There was just, there wasn't continuity. And, you know, the reason we're not talking about the World Cup of hockey or whatever it would have been called as something on the calendar is because, you know, it bounced all over the place, right? It just didn't seem to, it never kind of settled into a format and a pattern. If you change it up after one, aren't you kind of falling back into that?
I suppose there's a risk of that, but I tend to view it a little differently, and I'm pretty sure the NHL shares this view, that we'll see what happens with this. We'll look at the long calendar. We'll consider. But we would expect with this tournament and with any other kinds of events that we may eventually agree upon that you will move towards a settled format to create the kind of recurring interest where people understand what's going on that you describe, because there is real value there. Nobody questions that.
We understand a little bit about the economics. We understand this is a partnership between the NHL and the Players Association. We assume there's an agreement to divide revenues in some way, shape, or form. And we're not going to pry into what that situation is. I don't know that it's necessarily relevant. The one thing that occurs to me is, are these individual players going to be paid for their participation in this event?
Yes.
So,
and here's what it is. It's really not very simple. There will be expenses. There'll be a net. Nobody knows how much it's going to be. There'll be a division, and the players as a group, all 725 of them, will decide how that's distributed. Same way we did with transition payments.
So the entire union, the entire association will determine how the revenues from this championship or their revenues from this championship will be divided.
That's right.
All right. So theoretically, somebody who doesn't play in this event could get as much as somebody who does?
In theory, sure. I think that's very unlikely, though, but in theory, sure.
Okay. Are you 100% on board with the process? What has been determined?
I'm not sure what you mean.
Well, I understand this was a joint venture. I understand that obviously you and Mr. Bettman and various others put this thing together. Are you satisfied that this is going in the direction that you, as the representative of the Players Association, want it to?
Oh, yeah. And you have to remember, since everything we do has to be mutually agreed upon, if anybody's really aggravated and doesn't want to do something, that they can basically say stop. But whenever you do this, you talk, you consider, you think, you talk to potential partners, you talk to the federations, talk to the players, you talk to everybody there is, and you make a series of judgments as to what the best way through this is. You come to agreements, and then you live with them. You know, it's a pretty straightforward thing.
We thank you very much. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Did you want to say something else?
No, I said it's a pretty straightforward thing. So if you would ask me the question, you know, when I'm lying in bed at night and thinking about a perfect world, could I imagine something different than this or our current CBA or less snow in Toronto?
Right.
The answer is sure. But that's not the world we live in. And if on a practical basis, is this going in the right direction? Are we fully on board behind it? Do we think it's going to work in the real world? The answer is yes.
Make sure you union guys don't screw it up this time, okay? Don't.
Wait, no. I'll just leave you with one thought, because this tournament's going to break the rule. When I first went to work for Marvin Miller, and if you have listeners that don't know who he was, he's the guy that founded the Baseball Players Association.
That's right.
And basically established sports unions. He said to me, you have to remember that the only time the union's in the news is if there's a problem.
Mm.
So I'm sort of used to that, but this is going to break that rule. We're going to be in the news because there's going to be something really good happening.
We assume that that's going to be the case. We hope that'll be the case. Thanks, Don, for your time.
Your hopes. Thanks a lot.